It's Thursday, the 9th of May. I'm Alex von Tunzelman, and I'm raising a glass in memory of legendary recording engineer Steve Albini, who died yesterday. It's a glass full of petrol, and it's on fire. It's what he would have wanted. Punk is dead. Long live punk. Welcome back to Paper Cuts, the modern newspaper review. Every day, we check the levels on the national UK newspapers, amp up The Guardian through a fuzz box, tone down the reverb on the drums of the Daily Mail, and double, then triple the vocals on the Daily Star to produce a daily British Press Extended Club remix. Now, here are the top stories for today's show. Tory refugees not welcome. Conservative MP Natalie Elphick defects to Labour, and lots of them aren't too happy about it. Who's that girl? In an unbelievable development that is literally front page news in the Daily Mail, columnist Liz Jones has been dating a man who's never heard of her. And no phone, who dis? The Dutch are ditching their phones and actually talking to each other. Freaks. Welcome to Paper Cuts. We read the papers so you don't have to. Thanks for joining us on Paper Cuts, where we've all got literal brainworms in sympathy with American presidential candidate and huge Nepo baby Robert F. Kennedy Jr. RFK Jr. has confirmed that a parasitical worm ate part of his brain and promptly died in his skull.
And what was wrong with his brain?
Well, obviously not very tasty. Extremely unnutritious. And he's still less terrifying than Donald Trump. I'm Alex von Tunzelman, and joining me today is journalist John Elledge.
Hi.
John, if like RFK you were going to be eaten by an animal, which animal would you be eaten by?
I mean, obviously it would be Henry Scampi. I provide for him in life. Why should that stop at my death? Mum, if you're listening, you still have to adopt him.
He's a very good dog. And also with me is comedian Gráinne Maguire.
Buongiorno.
Gráinne, what animal would see you as a tasty morsel?
I think the only animal I respect, Animal from the Muppets.
He is a really good animal. He's great. John, you've got the clever papers this morning. What's up?
Well, let's not go nuts. I've got the Times.
I mean, it's relative.
So this is on the cover of a lot of the papers. Starmer splits party by accepting Tory defector over a picture of Keir Starmer with Natalie Elphick, who, she does have evil vibes, doesn't she? She just
like, bit of an evil face. Yeah,
yeah. It's just some people have to just have those faces. A different picture, the same thing over in The Guardian, the strap line, we don't need people like that. But that's under a bigger and vastly more depressing story. Scientists despair amid forecast of at least 2.5 degrees centigrade temperature rise.
Oh, God, we're all going to melt.
The Telegraph, weirdly, doesn't mention the defection, as far as I can see. Maybe it's inside somewhere. But its lead story, well, they have a big picture of the king. But next to that, Cameron, EU must be tougher on Russia.
Right, yes, reflecting their priorities.
Do not notice the collapsing government behind the curtain. Finally, the eye. God. Interest rate cut, quote, can't save Sunak, end quote, amid defection row. There's also a picture of a very happy, smiling chef who I believe was called Emma Hatcher. The headline, food to beat IBS. What I ate to fix my condition. And she's doing a big smile because she doesn't have IBS anymore.
Oh, yay. That's
so their
nice.
Lead story is maths and how not to shit yourself.
Basically, yes.
I mean, don't we all have that association after school math lessons?
Yeah. And Gráinne, you've got the silly papers. Again, relative.
So we've got the Daily Mail, and they're leading with Labour willing to pander to sectarianism in scare quotes, doing a lot of work. And then they also have a story about the Royal Rift, 2 miles away from each other, but a world apart. And they have a picture of Charles and Harry, and Charles is just cackling like a Bond villain. Like he's like, ha ha ha, this really worked out well for me. And Harry, he's got his little hand over his tummy, like he's going, ow, my heart is breaking.
That's not where Harry's heart is, Gráinne. he's got IBS.
Yeah, exactly. Needs some advice from the eye paper.
The Daily Mirror have a lovely picture of Lorraine going, I'm going to be a grand soon. I'm so excited.
Oh, good for her.
Listen, this is what we need. I think every newspaper should have at least one story about Lorraine and just like a catch up, how she's doing. The Sun also covering with the royal news, because what else would they be talking about? Diana family backs Harry. And there's a picture of Harry looking much more cheerful. And I just love the smaller headline. Late mum's brother and sister go to his Invictus ceremony. As if they're saying, oh, like, we don't know who Diana is. You know, Diana, she was his mother.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it has given them an excuse to print loads of pictures of Diana and all of this. So, I mean, you know, they're in their happy place, aren't they?
They are. And just a little picture of Diana from heaven looking down and being happy.
Diana.
Well, we assume she's in heaven.
I mean, and is that, sorry, I mean, I suppose there's a story here. Is it that Prince Harry was in Britain near the king, but not with him?
So Prince Harry was back. There was a ceremony for his Invictus charity at St. Paul's Cathedral, whereas Charles was in Buckingham Palace at a garden party. So right. I don't know if any of you listeners, you are aware of the geography of central London, but if one of them had like rented a London bike, they could have like, you know, high-fived each other within about 5 minutes. So what happened was Charles and Camilla were at Buckingham Palace, whereas Harry's true blood family, as they are iconically called, the Spencers, were by his side.
Right, right. I mean, front page news in several papers. Absolutely extraordinary.
And then the Daily Star are covering once again the stories all the papers are just too nervous to touch. Younger generation turn nose up at our put downs. So it's the end of the plonkers, plus the gits, the nitwits, the numpties, and even the Burks. So this is the big shocking story that some of the best words in the English language have fallen out of favour with the younger generations.
Thank God the Star's keeping them alive. Now, another Tory MP defected to the Labour Party yesterday, but this one hasn't been given the warmest welcome by everyone on the left. Natalie Elphick was until yesterday the Conservative MP for Dover and Deal. She's now the Labour MP for Dover and Deal. John, why is this causing a bit of a stir?
How long have we got?
Oh, as long as we like.
So, OK, some backstory. Natalie Elphick was for 25 years married to a man called Charlie Elphick, who, if you recognise his name, that's because he was the previous Conservative MP for Dover and Deal. He then lost the whip after accusations of sexual offences against two members of his staff. Eventually, he got done for that. His wife stood by him all the way through, defended him from the sexual abuse allegations until he went down, at which point they separated.
Right.
She's messy. I'm just going to flag that up. This girl is messy.
Surely she just believed he was innocent till proven guilty.
Possibly. I mean, after his conviction, by which time she had his old job, she said that although she felt he had behaved badly, she thought the sentence had been excessive, and she criticised the court as being, quote, on a bit of a mission. She right. also sold the story of her divorce to The Sun for £25,000.
Can I just say, in her defence, judges are notoriously judgy yeah. and judgmental. So she's got a point.
That's true. And they are on a mission. The mission is justice.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
She's also been, I mean, she's not been nice about either the Labour Party or immigrants. A year ago, she was writing an article for the Daily Express calling Starmer a softy and accusing Labour of wanting, quote, open borders. Not only have Labour got no plan of their own to tackle illegal immigration, they simply do not want to do it. She also had a go at Marcus Rashford for his belief that children should have food.
Right, okay. She's not coming across as the loveliest.
I mean,
there
is another, like, she is apparently genuinely passionate about the housing stuff. That's her background. Is working
housing
in housing policy. Sorry, housing policy. She's worked in housing policy. She thinks we need to build a lot more houses. She accuses the government of failing on that, as well as keeping the suspicious foreigners out. She thinks we need to build more homes. She thinks we need a rent freeze.
And
it sounds like at least part of the reason she's crossed the floor, live, by the way, at PMQs, literally crossed the floor, is because she wants to be an influence on the next Labour government's housing policy. But this has gone down like a bucket of cold sick with almost everyone. So, I mean, I'm going to be honest, I was genuinely excited about this story for about 3 minutes. Because it's just like, you know, more chaos for Rishi Sunak. This is fucking brilliant. This is my bread and butter. And then I remembered who she was.
Oh, yes.
And this does, let's be honest, this kind of is a fairly terrible message for anyone who's been a victim victim of sexual abuse. That, you know, people who defended sexual abusers, convicted sexual abusers, are now welcome in the Labour Party, apparently.
Labour is a broad church that has to include women who happily defend men who've been convicted for sexual assault.
That's an interesting phrasing, Grania. Do you have a? Is there a pithier word for that we could use?
Is there another word we have in the language?
No, legally there is not. That word's fine.
It's also striking that, so like she's got quite right-wing views, let's be honest, but she's apparently welcome in the Labour Party. Overnight, spokespeople were refusing to rule out the possibility of accepting Nigel Farage with open arms, he wish to join. And at the same time, the Labour left are being strongly encouraged to fuck off. So a lot of people are actually quite unhappy about this, not just the usual suspects. There are a lot of people questioning whether, you know, this is arguably a good tactical move. I think if, like, you know, the MP for Dover wants to defect at a time where, like, the small boats thing is kind of a major sense of friction with an election months away, I can understand why they wanted to say yes. But, you know, sometimes something can benefit you while also being morally bad. And I think it's at least possible that this is an example of that. Just because it maybe will work for the Labour Party, maybe they shouldn't have done it anyway. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Drink driving can help you to get to work on time.
It can. Robbing a bank can help pay off your overdraft.
I just think it's quite an... So, first of all, like, somebody bailing on the Tory party in their current situation, it's got all, like, she really reminds me of, you know, like, that's the scene in Titanic when Cal tries to pretend to be a woman to get into a lifeboat.
I've got a child.
That's what it reminds me of. And I just think of her career options. I can only assume she was like, right, this government is sinking. Okay, what is the word? Okay, I've got GB News. I've got maybe a stint on I'm a Celebrity. She got a no, and she was like, okay, worst case scenario, I can just join the Labour Party for 6 months. So that's where the Labour Party is like, oh, thank you, madam. And I think it's so grubby and sweaty and gross for both of them. It's just so pathetic. It's like, literally, it's like, the Labour Party at the moment is like one of those telephone boxes in central London where you're like, well, there's no point to us anymore. Do you want to piss on us? Piss on us. We don't care. Just give us an identity. It's so gross. It's so sad.
I don't think it's ever a great sign for the Labour Party when Grania gets really angry about something.
Does what's going on in the American election scare and bemuse you in equal measure?
Want to know what Biden and Trump are up to without tearing your hair out?
Then you need to listen to American Friction, the brand new podcast about the countdown to the big vote in November from the makers of Oh God, What Now?, The Bunker and Paper Cuts.
Every Friday, we'll speak to leading experts and blockbuster commentators from the United States to explain the latest news and the big issues behind the vote.
That's American Friction with me, Jacob Jarvis.
Me, Chris Jones.
And me, Nikki McCann Ramirez.
Out every Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Now to the Daily Mail female section, where we have relentless chronicler of her own apocalyptic love life, Liz Jones. Grania, Liz has a new victim. Tell us about him.
Well, listen, Liz, unlucky in love, Jones. She's single and she's ready to mingle. So the Daily Mail have set her up on a date with a Jeremy, 65. Who works as a marketing director, an eligible bachelor. So the Daily Mail went with her on a date, took pictures and interviewed them both afterwards to find out how these two lovebirds got on. So just Liz, I think this is fascinating because I think, you know, when you're younger, you think, oh, I'm messy and I'm doing it all wrong and men my age are a nightmare. But when I'm older, you think dating like over 40, it's just people in polonics drinking glasses of white wine and everybody's really sophisticated and everybody will be normal by then. So I think this is quite a heartening / scary read to be like, it never gets better. It never gets better.
No. So, not for Liz.
This is, I'm just going to read her opening gambit. I am a disaster when it comes to men. I didn't get my first boyfriend until my 30s. I lost my virginity at 32, and I was famously, disastrously married for 5 years to a man 15 years my junior.
Famously.
I mean, we all in this room did know that.
Yeah, we did.
Let's,
you see,
let's
the thing
not
is,
fudge
we
that.
Yeah, yeah, but I bet Liz. Well, you know, I'm sure everyone does. I mean, everyone knows who Liz Jones is. She's a superstar.
Then
that's
she
the
says,
assumption.
But throughout that, that's not even the lead story. I harboured a crush on a man I met at a party in 1983, and didn't get over for 40 unrequited years.
I mean, you see, if you've been following, as I have, Liz Jones for some time, you have been through all of this with her, by her side.
40 years. She's got a crush on somebody.
She's got a lot of copy out of this.
Then she finally got together with him because she said he was broken. So that she finally got him.
Women love that.
When a man's really like, fine, I'll settle for you. You're the, you know, I've got nothing else
you
going for me.
Life has brought me to a point at which I no longer have any fucking standards.
Go on then.
And then she proposed to him, and then she thought the idea of his cold feet, smoking in bed, wriggling about and making crumbs. So she's like,
making what?
Making crumbs.
What, just like a sort of little squirrel or something. What is he making crumbs out of?
And this is like, and again, I don't want to come across as a smug married when I read this next bit. But she says she doesn't like the idea of a relationship. She doesn't like the idea of having to wear makeup every day, getting dressed, getting waxed and being cheerful. It all sounds exhausting. My husband this year for Christmas bought me a bib because I'm such a messy eater. He bought me a bib.
I mean, surely...
Can I just point out the producer is genuinely trying to stifle his mouth? Because he's not meant to be audible and he's really struggling at that revelation.
So Liz, if you're listening, it's not that much work.
I mean, sort of the point of being in a relationship is you don't really have to get dressed or wear makeup anymore.
I mean, I have to say, so I've spent most of my adult life in relationships until I lost my partner last year. I've been single for the last 11 months. I am wearing trousers so much more frequently. Now I'm on my own and I have to go out.
Yeah, I mean, completely. Anyway, but all of this is preamble. She hasn't even got to the date yet. This is all just backstory.
There's like, another 3 hours of this,
it's,
guys.
It's like there's a villain origin story going on here. Or superhero, depending on how you look at it. Okay, so
she meets Jeremy.
65.
And she, again, we take it to Liz's point of view. She says, I know within milliseconds he would not tolerate me keeping my top on during sex in order to hide my cosmetic surgery scars.
Yep, that's where we're going with this. That's what's happening. That's
He stood up, he's gone to shake her hand, and she's like, oh.
He wouldn't tolerate me hiding my cosmetic surgery scars. I mean, how do you know that so quickly about someone? Also, there's so much going on there.
So throughout the date, she's obviously quite nervous, but she feels like he doesn't ask her any questions. She makes a big deal of the fact that he doesn't know me. He doesn't know me. So I think she's a bit like, once he finds out how glamorous I am, he's going to be enthralled, but he doesn't seem to be that bothered. So she's not impressed because I think he's not that. He's not giving her the attention that I think it would calm her down.
I mean, she needs quite a lot of attention.
And she says, even though I'm unsure about him, about myself, I know deep down I am a catch. If only a man would snuffle hard enough.
Snuffle?
Snuffle hard enough.
What? Sorry, where's he snuffling? She's happening?
She's thinking of pigs.
Is that a thing men do?
I don't know what you're expecting on a first date, Liz, but you're in a public place.
Well, she says she had a Hollywood wax, so I don't know what she's expecting. It's probably quite a lot.
So, but again, so I'm going to take sort of then Jeremy's point of view.
Yeah, which occupies about sort of a quarter of the space as Liz's, but I mean, fair enough.
But
you know,
okay.
He's not famous.
Okay, let's see if this, you know, changes your interpretation of Liz's night out. This is his opening gambit. I am shallow, looks-wise. I prefer beautiful women first, and then their wisdom.
Okay, Jeremy's a wrong'un.
Liz is a tall, slim woman who does not look her age.
Right.
So I'm getting alarm bells.
Yeah,
I'm getting alarm bells. Then he says, well, she's not particularly funny. She's a very good conversationalist. I can talk forever, and Liz is the same.
Oh, I'm not sure about Jeremy. Oh, Liz.
And then here again, this is where the biggest alarm bell went on. Let's see. I wonder if you can pick up on this. You probably can't. There, he's talking about dating. He said, there is an insistence on matching me with women my age. When age is just one factor, consider. Men see compatibility differently from women. So what is the subtext to that?
What do you mean you didn't think I'd pick up on that? What the fuck are you implying? Also, that's not like, you know, a very subtle... That's a red flag. That's a big enough red flag that it could be flown by North Korea.
Yeah, I think we can see the problems with Jeremy from space now.
Liz tells us, she proposed to the guy she was in love with for 30 years. She mentions this on the date, of course. Then he says, when Liz explained she's newly single after having proposed earlier this year, I gently said that it was an error for her to have done that. I'm a bit old-fashioned. It's not something for women to do.
Abort mission. Stay away from Jeremy. Bad, bad, bad. He gives a 9 out of 10, though.
Of course he does. This poor, poor, old, wizardly woman who, bless her, doesn't look as decrepit as he thought.
She's given him 7 out of 10. Lizzie's a 3.
Listen, I'm on Team Liz when it comes to this pair.
100%.
At least she's like, I know I'm mad. Where he's like, oh, this silly little woman, she's not as good looking. And, you know, age is just a number when you think about it.
So when you said this is like the Guardian's blind date, is it going to be like every week they match Liz Jones with a different man?
They can't find any more people who haven't heard of her. So no, I should think that's a one-off. Now on Paper Cuts, if you gave a million monkeys a million typewriters, it probably wouldn't take them a million years to come up with a newspaper headline. 6 monkeys in 5 minutes should do it. Yes, it's the headlines of the day. What do you have for us, John?
So I've got the Daily Star, page 3. Pink Floyd legend Dave Gilmore has admitted he is hooked on carpentry when he's not bashing the guitar. The Wish You Were Here Axeman has even made garden furniture for his country pile in Sussex.
Aww.
Now, I would say Wish You Were Here is not necessarily the... Is that the first Pink Floyd song you'd think of? But it does give them a headline, which is Wish You Were Veneer.
Well, they had to mention the song in the story in case you...
They did, yeah.
In case you were thinking, another brick in the wall?
Yeah. Oh. Britain's ugliest mutt has been cast in a new Deadpool film.
Oh!
I saw Pooch Peggy, who will star alongside Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman as Dogpool. Wade Wilson's four-legged friend. I have to say, Peggy is ugly cute.
I think Peggy's quite sweet. Hey,
I do want to hug Peggy.
I do quite love the world's ugliest dog competition. It's always a Chinese crested. They do not age well.
Yeah. Peggy goes to Hollywoof.
Oh, Hollywoof. Yeah. Oh, good luck, Peggy. You're right. Ugly cute.
But don't change, you know, Peggy. She'll come back. She'll have a lot of work done.
A bit of Botox.
Yeah.
Yeah, she'll be a pretty dog.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
Page 7. Boffins are urging people to dance in their gardens to save worms from wipeout.
What?
Are they?
Does that work?
The Soil Association is trying to map the UK's population of the wrigglers in order to track their decline. This is actually quite a sad story. Anyway, the headline is, get a wriggle on to save our worms.
There we go.
It should be do the worm.
Do the worm, exactly.
I think that's probably the wrong kind of dance. You probably terrify the worms.
Just sort of flatten them. Yeah. Wouldn't be so good. Grania, what have you got?
So I've got 3 from the Sun. You're having a great day. So the story is about the newlywed founder of Pretty Little Thing who missed out on a $54 million payday due to Boohoo's sinking share price.
Oh,
headline is,
sad.
I'm $54 million in the wed.
Right.
Because he got married.
Right.
In the wed.
In the wed.
Yeah. I like it.
Yeah, it's all right. Yeah.
Also in the Sun, moaning makes you happier as long as you do it to your mates, scientists claim. There's a picture of Victor Meldrew on a lawnmower. Headline is, it's fine to whine.
Okay. Yeah.
It could have went with, it's wine o'clock somewhere.
Yeah, well, that is better though. Mm.
And then tomato plants from seeds carried in human poo are sprouting on UK beaches, a Labour MP claims. It's just everything is completely normal and fine in the United Kingdom.
So is this because sewage is being dumped or, people just having a poo on a beach?
I think a little from column A, a little from column B.
Right, right, yep.
Headline is tomato poop.
Oh, like tomato soup.
Tomato poop. And it probably also works because I think the water looks like tomato soup.
Right. Just well, I know what I'm not having for lunch.
Then I was feeling unwell.
Hello, I'm Dorian Linsky.
And I'm Ian Dunn.
We are the hosts of Origin Story, the podcast that unpacks the history behind the ideas, the people and the events that shape political discourse today.
And we are back for season 5.
We're kicking off with a two-parter on George Orwell, the man, the work, the ideas. We follow him from Burma to Spain, through Second World War London, to the writing of his masterpieces Animal Farm in 1984, and how their legacy is used and misused today.
That's Origin Story Season 5, coming now from anywhere you get your podcasts.
When you're feeling battered by the white heat of news, why not take a graceful swan dive into the cooling waters of the features sections? Watch out for fire coral. And today we have a feature in The Guardian about how people in the Netherlands are getting into digital detoxes. Aranya, what's going on with our kooky Dutch cousins?
Well, if you're in Amsterdam and you fancy a break from your phone, there's a cafe called Café Brecht. This is a digital detox hangout where you pay £7.50.
Yeah, it's a bargain.
And you pay to just hang out in a cafe and nobody's allowed on their phone. And it seems like this sort of scheduled fun where you have like unwind time and then there's sort of like chatting to other people and then there's unwind time. But the idea is that you're not allowed to look at your phone or be on your phone. You have to give your phone away and put it's locked away and that's it. You can't go near it.
Right. And does this appeal to you?
This is why I go to the cinema. This is literally why I go to the cinema or I go to a museum is I turn my phone off and at the back of my head, I'm like, look at me being present. Look at me being in the moment. And then it's all building up to when I turn my phone back on. Oh, all the messages, all the WhatsApps.
Bing, 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 bing.
And it will just be one missed call from my mum. That's it.
Yeah.
That is the most deflating feeling, isn't it? When you feel like you've been offline forever and literally nothing has happened. Nobody's even noticed your absence.
Yeah, it does happen.
I mean, I was sort of cynical about this, but reading it, it actually sounds like quite a good idea. Like, I am very aware. You know that line in Garth Marenghi's Dark Place where he says, like, you know, I'm one of the few writers who's written more books than he's read. I'm worried I'm going in that direction. I have so little an attention span, and it is because I'm addicted to this little black box in my pocket.
And what about your phone?
But I've checked Twitter like 8 times since we've been in the studio. Like whenever Grania's talking, I just zone out and I see if anyone's talking to me in a different medium.
Well,
this is
that.
Not normal behaviour. I have a problem. Take my phone away from me. The other thought I had reading about the club where they take your phones away is it's obviously a sex club.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but all clubs are kind of sex clubs. I mean, isn't that the point of that? I'm looking around the room and everyone's like, not the paper cut supporters club. Or maybe it is.
Maybe at the higher tier.
Yeah, exactly. You can already pay for that. So, I mean, they are in the piece. You know, the piece people actually seem to be having quite a good time, though, don't they? I mean, you know, I agree. I think it's sort of weirdly quite appealing.
So like the bit where it's like, so the thing I didn't like is like it's structured. You have like half an hour sort of contact time where you talk to random people and then half an hour quiet time. You sit with a book or a magazine or something. And I think that kind of like enforced jollity sounds like bullshit. But I am going away next week and I am trying to work out like, can I just like, should I just like not have my phone for a period of time and just sit with a book? Would that be a good thing to do?
I'm just going to get really anxious.
I am. I will be convinced that I've missed some really important promotional opportunity or something and actually fuck all has happened.
And that's the end of today's Paper Cuts. Thanks to John Ellidge.
Thank God.
Thanks to Grania Maguire.
Mercy, mercy.
Join the Paper Cuts Supporters Club. Get rid of ads, get extra funny bits. Shimmy on over to papercutsshow.co.uk or follow the link in the show notes. I've been Alex von Tanzelman, and you've been listening to Paper Cuts on a day when Dani Minogue has clarified that she's heterosexual. On the launch of her TV show I Kissed a Girl, she said she, quote, identifies as queer in a weird way. She's now made clear on her Instagram that the weird way she identifies as queer is that she doesn't. Congratulations, Dani. You're so brave. See you tomorrow.
Paper Cuts was written and presented by Alex von Tunzelman with Grania Maguire and John Ellidge. The producer was Liam Tate. Assistant producer was Adam Wright. And audio producer was me, Jade Bailey. Music is by Simon Williams. Socials by Kieran Leslie. Design by Jim Parrott, with original art by Modern Toss. The executive producer is Martin Boytosh. Managing editor is Jacob Jarvis. And group editor is Andrew Harrison. Paper Cuts is a Podmasters production.